This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 83. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show. We focus on everything to do with fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, or anything else you can think of. Expect to find the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the show on our weekly episodes. To kick off this week's episode, we'll kick off things with my own author update. I wrapped up Huntress Clan Saga Book 2, which is Huntress Apprentice, and that is into the editor at this point. I'm waiting for it to come out. I'm prepping notes and my chapter beats so I can start writing Book 3 in that series beginning on Monday next week. If you're interested in taking a look at the first book in that series, you can check out Huntress Initiate, Huntress Clan Saga Book 1. And Huntress Apprentice should be out in probably just a few weeks, maybe by mid-January if things go as planned. So fingers crossed on that. As always, you can check out more information on what I'm up to by visiting my fan group on Facebook. That's Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, or over at my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you, so please check in with me when you get a chance. On today's show, we're going to have author Michael Anderle on the episode, and Michael is one of the top fantasy and sci-fi writers in the world. He has hundreds of published books that he's either written personally or collaborated with other authors on. His Cartharian Gambit series, the first series he wrote, is one of my favorite urban fantasy series. So you have to check this out. I've been friends with Michael for a while. He and I both started writing about the same time, and it's been fun watching his books take off and his career take off. So we'll chat a little bit with him about his books, about creating characters people can love and identify with, and a little bit about how authors collaborate on projects. Here it is. Michael, I just want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's great to have you here on the show. It's just awesome.
I appreciate it, Jamie. Thank you very much for the offer.
So why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? You're a very prolific writer, lots of fans and readers out there, but some of the folks might not have heard about you. So here's your chance to kind of give your spiel.
Okay. Well, I started writing a little over 4 years ago. The first book was Death Becomes Her. It's part of the Cartharian Gambit, or is the first one of the Cartharian Gambit universe. Since then, I wrote really quickly. I'd released 3 books my first month, and then another one the next few months after that. So by the end of 2015. So the end of 2016, I had also started with some collaborators. So we had probably 20, early 20s books out by that time. But with the collaborators going full swing in the following year, so that would be 2017, we put out, and I think we had 80-something books by the end of that year, 200-something books by the end of 2018, and now at 2019, we'll have like something like 630 books, I think, done and out titles that are out there by the end of this one with the whole company of LMBPN, including a new guy to us that I'm really excited about. What's his name? Jamie, what's his name? Davis.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, I thank you so much for the opportunity to work with you. Huntress Initiates, a passion project, is a lot of fun. Book 2 is going to be even better, I hope, and I'm working on Book 3 now. So,
absolutely,
what I'm working on.
So let me. I'm going to turn the tables on you a little bit, since this is for the readers. But what is the Huntress Initiate?
The Huntress Initiate is basically a story of in a world where the hunters, the people that keep us safe from all the creepy crawlies and the bad guys and the demons in the world, they've been killed off. There was a purge, and so they've been gone for 20 years, or most of them are gone. This young girl is an orphan and grows up not knowing who she is. All she has is this amulet and her name, and that's it. And she discovers that she is one of the last of the hunters. And so she has to kind of learn her skills, learn her powers all over again, and start discovering that there's this hidden world all around her, and there are going to be people expecting her to do something about some things.
Well, we're very excited to have you on board LMVPN and looking forward to the great things that you're doing. So I'll return the baton back over the microphone back over to you. And so with that, you know, Cuthrian Gamut's grown to be well over 200 something, 230, 240 books. And we have other universes in the company, but that's kind of how it got started. And so one of the biggest book series that we have producing now, and in particular, most of LMBPN is what's called exclusive to Amazon, which means we're in Kindle Unlimited for 600 of the 630 books. And the Opus X series, which is brand new, just released book two, Shattered Truth, a few weeks ago. And that series will be wide only. So we'll be doing wide on that for the next 18 months and, you know, trying to build a name out there. So it's kind of thing, a little bit inside baseball for some readers, but just know that if we want to be on Google Play and Apple and the others, we can't also be in Kindle Unlimited with that series.
Yeah. And for the readers that are in Kindle Unlimited, you know, they understand that they get to read all these books and they pay one monthly fee. And that's a great opportunity. I'm wide for about half of my books and in KU for the others. And it's an opportunity to reach readers in a lot of different places.
Absolutely.
And I'm excited to see what goes on and how you all fare with this opportunity to go wide, because you've certainly created a very loyal following for all your books in Kindle Unlimited and in your readership in general. And that starts with Death Becomes Her, you know, your first book you wrote. And so let's kind of go back in time. You and I met a long time ago at the first Smarter Artist Summit, maybe, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I mean, were you at the one with the little kind of art deco sort of place that had like one restroom?
Yes.
Three. Okay. So yes, we met then.
Yes. Yeah. We all remember standing in line for the bathroom. Great conversations happened there.
Yeah, well, really great. It's not exactly the water cooler, but, you know, it's a little different.
Yeah. But Death Becomes Her, it's such a great story. It's actually one of my wife and I, we've enjoyed that series. Bethany Ann is such an iconic character. And kind of give us an idea of where this thought came from, because I love the way you describe it in the very first line in the description for this book is, what you thought you knew about vampires and werewolves is wrong. So very, very wrong. And that's just such a compelling way to introduce the book.
I wish I had thought of that. I actually got that concept from a reader that had plugged in a review, I think around book five or so. They had said something somewhat similar. I'm like, that's it. That's what, you know, because the reality is that Cuthrian Gambit is what we would consider genre mashup, right? It has paranormal, it has science fiction, it has, you know, action adventure, it has all of these different things to it. But we know on the marketing side, when we do our books, one of the challenges is we need to actually market it to one genre and not confuse the readers. So I chose to market it to the paranormal genre, and everybody who gets really into the book and they're really loving it, about halfway in, they find out, wait a minute, this is a science fiction book. And it's, yeah, to a point, yes. But what happened for me was I took something from Steve Jobs, and Steve Jobs had a comment one time that he said, whenever you're doing a presentation, never give something more than three qualities, make it your three best. So for example, when he did the iPhone, he goes, it's a phone, it's an iPod, it's the internet. And he said it over and over and over again, it's a phone. And so with Bethany Ann, I took that concept to mean that I needed to give her three qualities. And I chose that they should be two qualities that are relevant and one quality of fun. And that one quality of fun hopefully should be something that excites a fan to love it or hate it, but in a fun way. For example, Bethany Ann, she is about justice, not law, because those things are two different things. She's about justice. She is about her friends, which is her family, and it's extended, right? Whoever she feels dearly about, she's going to be very much like the Marines, no friend left behind. And so you know that if she can do anything, she will be there. And the third one is she likes Coca-Cola, not Pepsi. She's adamant about it. And it's an ongoing aspect of it. And another example for some people might be pizza. You love normal pizza, or better yet, we do it this way. You either accept that pineapples and ham go on pizza, or you don't. There's no middle ground with that. And so it's one of those concepts where you can take anything, draft, you know, beer. I'm not a beer drinker, so I'm doing this off the top of my head, but beer, you either accept light beer or you don't accept light beer, you know? And so you choose one of these aspects that people can, chili, beans or no beans. So right. Is for you, are you beans or no
I'm
beans?
I'm a beans guy. We have beans in our chili.
Yeah, no, no, God didn't, no. And so, you know, that's the fun of doing that, that one fun thing. But when people connect, they're connecting with her with those two emotional things. And then she becomes a well-rounded character with a third, is my opinion. You know, everything is hashtag my opinion. So
no, it's, that's important. I mean, but I think you're spot on with that. I think that's important with the way you've modeled Bethany Ann, certainly has made her, like I said, an iconic character for a lot of people. That there are people naming their babies Bethany Ann because of this.
That was I had had many blessings, but finding out that someone, a husband and wife, had chose to name their little girl Bethany Ann because they both loved this character was something I never expected. I had one person put a tattoo kind of a couple, 3 years ago. I thought, that's really cool. You know, they have a tattoo of this. This is, you know, how cool can you get? But yeah, not a baby.
It'll be interesting to see what she's like when she's a teen, because Bethany Ann is all about justice. And so,
yeah. And I mean, she's a little fighter. She was born with a little bit of some issues with her foot, you know, in that area, the leg, right? The lower area. And so she's going to have a little bit of challenges, but, you know, I wish I had a pod just to be able to, you know, a medical pod just to drop her in and be able to fix that. But I'm really excited to see where she goes in life.
Yeah, it's just awesome. And I think that that's one of the things that really is your readers accept, you know, that it is a mashup of genres, you know, that they've come to love all of that. And then you expanded the universe, the Cuthrian universe, to be, you know, that there is this age of magic where things have kind of become magical, even though there's this underlying technology, but yeah, the magic is there.
Well, if you go to physics, right? Because one of the original things going with the Cuthrian Gambit, and the reason it is a mashup is because I figured, and this, I was doing this when I'm 48, so it's not like I'm a young pup. And I had figured if this particular series actually made it big. Now, why I even accepted that premise in the first place was beyond me. It was my first book, but I did. I needed to make sure it had all the aspects of the genres I loved, because I was going to be writing it for a long time. And thank God I did that, because I was writing it for a long time, you know, or have been writing it for a long time. And so in doing so, I looked at it and said, okay, what do I like? Well, I like paranormal. I like vampires. I like werewolves. And I don't want to create my own universe necessarily. I want to set it here on Earth, because I'm not a big guy that wants to go and figure out what's the world of religions. What are, you know, how does the currency work? That doesn't thrill me whatsoever. So I set it during present time so I could get it off the ground really quickly. And then I created three concepts, which was here on Earth, near space. So we had, you know, going up. And then I had one, you know, outer space, where we're in another galaxy or another universe or something. And so I always get those confused, which is which. But in doing that, I created 21 book arc. And so I broke the books down and made sure that each one was progressing along the arc. Something I didn't realize that happened because of that was they never got old. Because you're ongoing toward a goal, you're never repeating the same book, which is what most people would say around 6, 7, 8. A lot of authors will, it feels like they're just rehashing the same thing. There was never a need, because we're constantly building toward that goal. And so that was kind of neat. Now I've totally lost my train of thought of where I wanted to try to get back to.
I think I've asked you about, you know, how you expanded it into the different, you know, the different, you know, the age of magic and, you know, the post-apocalyptic things that were going on that kind of took the series in a different direction with your collaborators.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So one of the aspects of this particular series, the science fiction behind it, are nanocytes. And the concept is that nanocytes, of course, are a mechanical item to a large degree, that are able to invade a body and change it. They're able to look at the DNA and find out, well, what was this DNA supposed to do? Because you can have DNA where maybe the wrong aspect is chosen. And so instead of being 6'1", which should have been how tall I was, I'm 5'10¾" or something like that, right? And so it looks at it and chooses all the best aspects of you, and then provided certain energy capability, it will modify you So it doesn't necessarily say, okay, you're a woman and your best aspect, which is incorrect, is 6'4". It's like, no, highly unlikely, at least. It's going to find what's appropriate for your gender, your sex, which is the same, and all the other information. And so with these nanites, they require energy. And if you look at going back to the physics of things, everything is energy. Everything. Solid matter is energy. And if you follow that to its logical conclusion, that would mean that fire is energy. Lightning is energy. The ability to create or other stuff. Now, mind you, everything is energy but gravity. And the only reason we don't understand how that is exactly is because we don't understand how gravity works. At least to my understanding, we don't yet. And so if I wanted to create a ball of fire, I apply some construct to energy. If I have enough energy, I can create a ball of fire. So therefore, you have magic based on the whole concept of magic is merely technology we don't understand yet. And so we went through this path. Now, we have these set of aliens called Kertherians. And in over the millennia, the Kertherians have had different both belief systems and structures to where they want to go in life. And so the concept is, what would happen if you have an advanced group of beings, these Kertherians, and at one point they decide that their goal for their species is to raise up other species who are not as mentally or ethically capable as they are, and then they splinter. And this concept was a little bit based on the Judeo-Christian Israeli 12 clans. It's actually 12, it's not clans, what are they? 12 tribes.
Tribes, right.
12 tribes. And if you look at that, you'll realize that there was like one that followed God and 11 who didn't. Not exactly good. I at least increased it to 7 bad ones and 5 good ones. And so based on that, we said, okay, there's this premise that they're all out there trying to advance other species in order for them to ascend themselves. And now we have a situation where a group of them decided, we're going to get rid of this this personality trait in ourselves genetically that causes us to fight. Seems like a good idea until you realize only 5 of them did it and 7 of them chose not to. Now you have the 5 people who are pacifists, basically, now having to control the 7 who aren't. So they send out, and you end up learning a lot of this, but they end up sending out scouts and everything else. And that's how we ended up with a bunch of different Kertherian groups here on Earth and how vampires came about. Vampire, the very first one, was a human, you know, Michael, who actually has nothing to do with me. I didn't even think about that. I named him after the angel Michael. And like many, many books into the series, someone is like, you know, you had a lot of gumption to name the main character after yourself. And I'm like,
you know, I didn't even pick up on that. That's you know, I didn't make that connection either. So,
well, see, thank you. I didn't, and I'm the one writing them. So with that though, Michael's turn, if you will, by this one Kertherian failed. It got him partway, but then he ended up breaking out of the system because that Kertherian didn't know how to handle humans. And so he became the first vampire. And then we have degenerative situations with the nanocytes. And so another different group created werewolves. And then we have all of these different things. So your point of Age of Magic was, how do we get from the situation we have when Bethany Ann is on Earth over to this Age of Magic? Because it would need to go through some changes. And nothing's good with technology except a good virus, a good technological virus to mess things up. And so that, therefore, we got the Age of Madness when things go horribly wrong. So, why bring in collaborators? One, I couldn't write as fast enough. Right. I mean, I was doing at that time a book every 5 weeks, and that was nearly enough. I did a couple of skips, and fans were not pleased. I skipped 3 years in the timeline, and fans were like, well, what happened? And I'm like, well, nothing major happened, so we just skipped them. No, that wasn't good enough. And so I'm like, oh, man. So Scott Paul came in to help build in some of that. So when it became obvious I was going to have a 120-year skip, I was like, yeah, I know what's going to happen here. So that's when I reached out to Craig Martell and asked him, would he be willing to help, you know, fill in the blanks, and others, Justin as well. And so, yeah, that's part of how it all grew. It's just I didn't want fans upset with me.
Was it hard for you to let go of the world or the characters to the extent that you had to let some, you had to trust someone else to run with it?
No. And that is, my background is in IT. And so I, you know, I have to play on teams a lot. So that wasn't really a big deal to me. But more than that, I think is the fact that I love publishing. I love the fact of building a company. That's been my heart's desire for my whole life, practically. I remember when I was a teenager and, you know, I'm coming down, I'm 9th, 10th, 11th, right in there. And the paper, back when we had paper, you know, was there. My dad has pulled it out and he's getting ready to go to work. And we're at the kitchen table and he grabs the sports section and I grab the business section. That should have been a light bulb moment that's where my focus should have been. So my whole life I've been trying to build little companies. And so as a publisher, I want to grow. I can't grow by having a precious baby. So I just don't have that much of an issue having people build in, because my view is not this series, it's this universe. And I want all the little pieces. And my fingers still hurt to this day by how much I pounded on the keyboards that first year and a half. So no.
Yeah, no, it's you've created something really special by doing that. You've got, like I said, super loyal readers, people who follow everything that comes out. Do you ever run into a situation where people ask you questions that you can't answer because they've read into something, some deep meaning?
Yes.
or some, they remember some tiny snippet of a phrase that you forgot you wrote?
I do. I had one a couple of weeks ago. An individual asked us something about a series Natalie Gray wrote in December of 2016, December, January, February, that time frame, in early 2017. And I'm like, I think it was this, but you'd have to ask Natalie Gray, who's here on Facebook, if you want a definitive answer, because it's been a few hundred books since that time that I was even involved in that project. Because a lot of time, the collaborations are me explaining why I think these books are are such a success. People are so engaged with them. And it has to do with emotions. You know, emotions, the dopamine, which is the little receptor, the dopamine chemical that the brain kicks off when you're happy, right? If as a writer, we're able to figure out what that dopamine hit is, then you are now a drug pusher. And if you can push that drug of dopamine to a reader multiple times in the book consistently, you think they're going to get book two? Yes, they absolutely will get book two. Because you've allowed them to enjoy it. Now, the challenge is not every reader, in fact, not even a great preponderance of readers, like the same dopamine hit. For example, I'm working with some horror writers. You know, Dan Wilcox is a horror writer. And while we're working on different projects than horror, I've asked him, like you and I talking right here, why do you like this? Why are you into horror? I just can't even understand what it appeals to you, because I don't personally like to be scared shitless.
Me either. I don't. Two of my three kids are all about the horror movies. They go see every one that comes out and they love them. And my son and I are like, huh? The last thing I want is to have something jump out at me and just out of the blue.
And what it's fascinating to me from that perspective, because as a personality, that's really what it is. They are wired differently. You have to understand that not every human being understands and reacts to the same stimuli the same, right? So when you look at the permutations, that means that let's say that I put 100, just for the sake of discussion, 100 dopamine hits into my book. At best, I should hope for 40 to 50 of them to hit a reader, probably. The ones that are most similar to me, which at maybe 12% of the population, I might get 70, 80, 90, you know, they're not going to all hit. And then you have someone who maybe is a major horror reader who might like 10, 5 dopamine hits, and they're just not going to like the book because I'm not hitting the way that they receive. And so from that perspective, you understand how come we have so many genres? How come do we have so many characters that don't work? Because the readers, the writers, some of the writers, well, one, would you agree, Jamie, to say that as authors, we're kind of a kooky bunch?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt.
You know, we have our likes and things are just all over the map. And so for you and I, if I were to say, hey, man, what are the tropes? Right. As a reader out there listening to this, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm always in publishing mode, but, you know, an author of publishing mode. But as a reader, what you realize is that a trope is a type of or part of a story that you like. An example might be a bad boy romance trope, meaning that the romance, the female is going after the guy that's on the other side of the railroad tracks, the motorcycle, but that's a trope. And the reason it became a trope is so many people have written it and so many people have liked it. It became a shortcut to knowing that if you put that trope in there, if you can marry that trope up with these readers who like that trope, you're going to have the best chance to be successful with your story. And as authors, when I was talking about Kooky a while ago, we like really esoteric things at times. And so we have something that just hits 100% of our dopamine hits. Unfortunately, that might mean 12 to everybody else. And that's not even including whether or not we wrote well in the first place. So that helps give some insight into sometimes how come you love certain books and don't. And the best way to find out if you're a reader and why covers matter is because if you like, let's say, these six books and five of them have a very similar cover, and you know that the tropes, the dopamine, the drug of your choice is behind those five covers, what are the chances you're going to like a book with a similar color cover? You don't even know why you do, but you want the drug that's in it.
No, absolutely. And it's, I tell other authors, you know, that we talk about these things just like you and I are, and it's, you know, you're giving them that nod that that's what this book's about. And as long as your book is actually about what your cover says it is, that's going to be just an instant dopamine hit right there, because they made the right decision, to read into this book based on the cover that they saw. And you're right about us being a kooky bunch. We just
we will talk about so many esoteric things. What do you think about a nine-legged octopus?
Yeah, like, right.
Don't they have eight legs? Yeah, but it's genetically changed. One leg is different.
Yeah,
is that like saying
leg.
It goes to 11?
Yeah, right. Yeah, but my octopus has nine legs.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Michael, it is great having you on the show and talking about this. You know, your books, the Cartharian Gambit, and all the books that come out under LMBPN, your publishing company, really, your goal is to make readers happy. And I think that readers are going to do that when they find your books.
I want you, the readers watching this, I want you to want to reread our books. So we try to create characters that you want to be with. Even if it was on Friday night just watching the movies, you'd still want to be with them.
Well, and I think you do a good job of that. Michael, where can folks find more of your books and what you're working on and things like that?
We do have a website, LMB, as in boy, P as in, well, it's actually London, Madrid, Barcelona, Paris, New York, lmbpn.com. Just find us there. You're going to see constant updates on things that are coming out. If you're on Facebook, hey, jump in on the Cartharian Gambit series. Or we have other ones. We have the LMBPN for ladies, if you want one that's a little bit more. But just fair warning, we have a few of these, and some of these are I want to say they're not adult, like that type of adult. They're more adult, like, hey, anything goes here for adults to talk to adults, like you would around a water cooler type of thing. And you're not worried about HR. But the Cartharian Gambit is very benign from that perspective. Protected by the Damned is not benign. But yeah, just find us there, lmbpn.com, LMBPN webs, Facebook, but Cartharian Gambit, Aura Seren as well. That's another major series. And love to have you become part of the family.
Well, thank you for inviting me in. And I'm looking forward to a long relationship. And like I said, folks, read the books. You'll find out exactly what Michael and I were talking about when we talk about making awesome characters, because Bethany Ann is an iconic character. Who knows? You might read about it and decide to name your kid after her too. Michael, thanks for coming on the show.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity, Jamie. We'll be right back.
That's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community. You can find us both on Facebook in Fantasy Focus's group there or over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also on the website, on each podcast episode post, you're going to find links to subscribe to the show using your favorite mobile app for iOS, Android, even you can subscribe by email if you want. So check those out. Those links are right below the audio player at the top of each episode page. We also have some pretty awesome authors scheduled coming up in the next few months. We actually have a return visit from best-selling author Sarah Nofke. You won't want to miss her episode. We actually get to find out what her big secret project was that she talked to us about 6 months ago about, but couldn't give us too many details. So we'll jump in and talk a little bit about that in that upcoming episode. That's it for this episode, though. Here we are at the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I write fun fantasy reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. You can find me on my author page, Jamie Davis Books, or on my author Facebook group, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and of course my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. If you want, you can actually check out my writing for free over there. Just check out the sidebar on the right-hand side, and you can sign up and get a free book just by checking out my newsletter over there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe to this podcast and come back here for the next show. In the meantime, as always, I want to remind you to keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.